You are listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Nana Jumpfee. The negative effects of COVID-19 on the U.S. economy are generally expected to serve as a divisive tool and wedge issue in the upcoming November elections and for some time to come. While some experts look for ways to address the pandemic-related economic crisis with the usual focus on appealing to individual self-interest, our guest, Dr. Manuel Pastor, offers an alternative model, solidarity economics. Dr. Manuel Pastor is a distinguished professor of sociology at the University of Southern California, where he currently directs the Equity Research Institute. His research has generally focused on issues of the economic, environmental, and social conditions facing low-income urban communities and the social movements seeking to change those realities. His most recent book is State of Resistance, What California's Dizzying Descent and Remarkable Resurgence Means for America's Future. Welcome, Manuel. So honored to have you join us.
I'm so glad to be with you. I love the work that you do and the work that, in particular, BAJI, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, does in terms of figuring out how we can both center the struggle against anti-Black racism and make sure that we're including our immigrant brothers and sisters in the struggle. Fantastic.
Thank you so much. It is work done much easier with comrades like you. Explain for folks, because it almost sounds like an oxymoron to most people. What is solidarity economics, and how does that differ from the current model we're used to thinking of?
Well, let me give a common sense explanation first, then I'll give a little bit of the kind of history and roots of it. But you know that if you treat your neighbors better, you know that if you own a business and you treat your workers better, you know that if you patronize a business, they treat you well, you treat them well, that everything works out better in the economy. And what's odd is that we've organized an economy in completely the opposite direction from that. That is, we've organized an economy of ruthless competition, of cutthroat activities, and all of that has been essentially to serve the interests of giant corporations. So when we think about solidarity economics, what we tend to think about is that the traditional economic model, neoliberalism, assumes that people only act out of their self-interest, and that when they act out of their self-interest, that somehow prosperity will result. This is the reason why, if you ask generally any traditional economist, if there's a problem in the economy, what should be done? They say, well, just let the market take care of it. The market will take care of racial discrimination. The market will take care of a lack of housing. We've seen how well that's worked. If you think about the way that most of us on the left have traditionally thought about how instead to address that, we often say, well, the state needs to jump in. That if you're trying to correct the housing market, the state needs to play a role. If you're trying to correct the environment, the state needs to play a role. While all of that makes sense, particularly in people of color communities, we know how bad the state is at getting things right. After all, it's the state that's helped to bring us sustained police brutality such that there's a generalized uprising going on right now against policing in America. So what solidarity economics does is it says really three fundamental things. One is people don't just act out of their self-interest. They often also act out of mutuality. Second, that when people act out of mutuality, we can actually generate more prosperity over the long haul. So when we are really looking out for other people and trying to make sure that we're investing in public education for everyone, we're trying to make sure that everyone has a job. We're trying to make sure that small businesses, particularly those owned by people of color that have been disenfranchised economically, we know that that generates a better economy. The third sort of precept of solidarity economics is that the only way we're going to get to a better economy is through solidarity with one another and through power. That is, by creating the kind of systems of organizing and social movements that can disrupt the current power relations that maintain a dysfunctional economy. It is not functional for an economy to have this level of corrosive inequality. It is not functional for it to have an economy that puts so many people in prison and wastes their talent. It is not functional to have an economy where so many of our brothers and sisters are living with insecure immigration status and therefore are not able to fully realize their own dreams or fully contribute to our community well-being. And so we know that that level of racial disparity, of worker disenfranchisement, of immigrant insecurity serves someone's interests. And that is the interest of gigantic corporations. So three big things. The economy really should be organized around our mutuality. Two, that when we do that, we will actually generate more economic growth and prosperity that will benefit everyone. And third, that we're only really going to get to the kind of economy and society that we want for ourselves if we organize and use social movements to change the balance of power that keeps this dysfunctional economy in place.
That sounds so good. This is the reason that I want us to make sure that we spread the word about this way of looking at economics and looking at how we look at each other with respect to economics, so important in this time. How would solidarity economics help those who are most impacted by the COVID pandemic?
Well, I think the COVID pandemic is almost like a sales pitch for solidarity economics, because one of the things that we've kind of realized in the midst of this big crisis is we now know what essential work is, and it's not being the manager of a hedge fund. It's being a grocery store clerk, a bus driver, a healthcare worker, a janitor who keeps our buildings clean, a farm laborer who makes sure that food is coming to us, etc. We know what essential work is, and it's work that's been long treated as disposable, as sacrificial, as not worthy of respect. Second, we've learned from the COVID crisis that we can only protect ourselves when we protect everyone. Many of us are wearing a mask, and that's probably a little bit for our own safety, but it's also because we've realized that when we wear a mask, we're protecting everybody else in our atmosphere, and we're also sending a signal that we are in solidarity with everyone else, and we're going to try to be as careful as possible in the way that we do things so that we can have a healthier society. There's a basic public health principle that, you know, you are only as safe as everyone else is safe. And that is really what solidarity economics is all about as well. And then finally, I think what solidarity economics has done has kind of made us realize that the government is the ultimate backstop to a good society. There's going to be no robust private sector until there is safety for workers at work and dignity and respect for those workers when they tell us what they need to be safe. And there's only going to be a robust private sector when there's a robust public sector that's testing people, making sure that we're safe. And more than that, I think it's really important, Anna, to recognize that it's not just about a robust public sector, but about a robust community sector. We've recognized in the midst of this COVID crisis that communities have stepped up to create mutual aid societies. That's been very typical of the Black community. It's been very typical of immigrant communities as well, of people looking out for one another in the midst of this crisis because they recognize the market is not going to do the trick and the government is not going to do the trick. It only works when we are acting in solidarity and mutuality with one another. And I think there's some kind of fundamental lessons that are coming out from this. I think there's another thing that's really important. The typical neoliberal economic strategy basically doesn't recognize race. It sort of says, well, you know, if there's racial discrimination, the market is going to compete it away. And the typical, you know, left argument around race is that race is just a distraction from our biggest common interest, which is class and our economic desperation. But we've recognized in a crisis which has essentially ripped its way through the Black and Latino immigrant communities. That is, when you look at the data, African Americans and Latinos are twice as likely to be dying as a result of this crisis as other communities because they're left without health insurance, because they're stuck in the kind of work that means that they need to keep on, they're economically precarious. There's a gigantic racial wealth gap where for white families, the net wealth is about $125,000 of net wealth. But for African American and Latino families, the net wealth is about $17,000 to $21,000. So that's, you know, you just don't have the assets to fall back on. You wind up having to go to work, and that sort of puts you at risk. This crisis has made really clear how riven with race and racism is our economy. And one of the things I think that's essential about solidarity economics is that it centers the role of race in the economy, and it recognizes the nature of racial capitalism and the fact that it's not just a question of saying that, you know, we're all affected by this thing equally. Like, we're all, yes, we are all susceptible to COVID, but some of us are a lot more susceptible than others because of the legacies and ongoing realities of racism in our economy and our society. And solidarity economics says we need to center race, we need to center the struggle against anti-Black racism, and when we do that, we can build a better economy that, yes, will benefit everyone, but we can only get there if we deal with race.
Absolutely. While you were saying all of that, I was thinking about the mutual aid that Baji and other organizations have set up for our communities. And I always go back to the Black immigrants, the Latinx immigrants, and African Americans that are in these poultry plants, that are in the grocery store. You know, it's like all of these essential workspaces, the hospitality space, the hospital space, and not just as doctors, but also, you know, those folks that are cleaning up and making sure that COVID doesn't just spread like wildfire in these hospitals, and how we're, our living is so interconnected. And so when you talk about solidarity economics in a way that it talks about the public health and really connects to public health, that's so important. And also in this time, we hear folks talking about police, police crimes, police brutality, the impact of police violence in Black, whether citizen or immigrant, as well as communities of immigrants of color. And we hear the conversation about divesting from police and investing in community. Can solidarity economic theory incorporate those current calls for the divestment from what I call cops in cages and investment in community wellness?
Yes, it can, and I will say a word about that. But I do want to say that something you said touched me very deeply, because my dad was a janitor, but my grandmother was a cleaner in a hospital. And that's how she worked the last part of her years. And, you know, you realize that that work is just as essential and important as the nurses and the doctors, because you need to have the place clean. And that work is dignified, it is deserving of respect, and it is deserving of rewards that are commensurate with its value. And one of the things that we've gotten totally screwed up in our current capitalist society is the value of things. So that we've got these home care workers who are taking care of our most precious folks, our elderly, and yet their pay and their working conditions are horrible. We've got farm workers who are absolutely critical to making sure that in this crisis we can have food, and yet their pay and their working conditions are suboptimal. So we really need to lift this up. With regard to cops, caging, and community safety, absolutely. I think that solidarity economics in dialogue with these social movements can help us to think more creatively about this. Because when you think about it, what is the sort of neoliberal kind of solution to the question of security in communities. Well, let's privatize. Let's, put up gates. Let's hide behind walls, and let's have privatized security departments patrolling the privatized security guards patrolling the households of the wealthy, protecting them from everyone else. What is the way that the state addresses this? With the kind of racist policing we've seen, which has resulted in the murder of George Floyd and the taking of lives, for example, of Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta, in a way that was just a very awful tragedy as well. When you think about what communities are calling for, what Black Lives Matter is calling for, what allies are calling for, they're asking for a revisioning of community safety. And much of that has to do with the idea of mutuality, that communities can police themselves or create safety for themselves. That when there's an emergency, it's the local community that might know that that individual may be having a mental health crisis right now and would be better approached by someone who knows something about mental health counseling than someone who comes with a uniform and a gun. Mm-hmm. In some ways, solidarity economics is exactly the kind of recipe for thinking about how do we organize a different kind of system in which community safety is paramount and in which the sort of role of the state, violence in policing, is limited and eventually eliminated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The world that we are working on building and working on it together. How do our listeners get more information about solidarity economics and all of the work and research that you are doing?
Well, the easiest thing probably is to go to our website, which is at the University of Southern California. As is always the case, giving you the URL would be long and complicated, but telling you to Google USC space PERE, which is the Program for Environmental and Regional Equity, and you'll land on our website. And you'll see a bunch of stuff around solidarity economics. You'll see a bunch of stuff around the coronavirus crisis and how it is that solidarity can be an alternative approach to dealing with this. And you'll also see that really a lot of careful attention to a set of issues that you and I hold dear, which is how do we build the kind of coalitions amongst people of color that can actually create an alternative vision for the society that we live in and provide broader leadership for America right now? And how do we do this in a way that does something that Americans find it very difficult to do, hold two ideas in your head at the same time, which is that we need to center the struggle against anti-Black racism, because it's anti-Black racism that largely sets the terrain for the way any other immigrant group is experiencing othering, racialization, and marginalization in the United States. So how do we center anti-Black racism and at the same time build a multicultural movement that can bring dignity and respect to all communities? So that's a lot about what we try to talk about on those websites. I know that's a lot of your life's work, and I just want to end by saying that you are one of my sheroes. You've picked up one of the most amazing and wonderful organizations that we've been working with since its beginnings with Gerald Lenoir, and I'm so glad that it's in your good hands as we move forward to try to build a society that honors immigrants, that honors Black folks, that honors work, that talks about dignity and respect for all.
Thank you so very much. High praise coming from someone as esteemed as you, my comrade and colleague. Really appreciate all the work that you are doing. And, you know, I'm excited about being on this leg of this journey with you and with the folks that we are working with, really to, what do they say, give us 6 inches of daylight. We're managing to get through that 6 inches of daylight with a lot of great things. And so really appreciate you. Thank you for this interview. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you very much.